Our top story on the KRMG Morning News with Dan Potter happening now. There is a manhunt underway for a murder suspect in the shooting yesterday of a 15-year-old boy.
Several Tulsa police officers responded after an emotional crowd had gathered at the scene near Apache and Harvard yesterday about noon.
It's challenging. I mean, it's part of what we train for. It's part of what we experience.
Police are looking for 18-year-old Marcus Heron. See his picture at KRMG.com. Heron is accused of shooting the boy several times, but police still don't have a motive. We're told there were several young people present in the apartment when the shots were fired. If you have information, call Crime Stoppers at 596-COPS. I'm Bishop News 102.3 KRMG.
This is a special edition of the KRMG Morning News, 8 a.m. in-depth hour on News 102.3 KRMG.
801, Dan Potter with Rick Corey, and welcoming back about a year after he was last on this show in person, Tulsa Homicide Sergeant Detective Dave Walker. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Welcome back. It was a year ago. We had you. We had the chief here. We had Popsy Floyd here. We were talking about community policing. And immediately after that show, I said to Rick, we have got to get Dave Walker back by himself for a full hour just so we can delve deep into your world, which most of us, fortunately, will never get to experience. But thank you for agreeing to do this. Sorry it took us a year to get you back in here, but we're glad you're here now.
Well, thank you.
Let's start with this latest case at Apache Manor. The 15-year-old shot and killed yesterday looking for 18-year-old Marcus Heron. Can we release the 15-year-old's name yet?
Haven't done that yet.
Okay. We'll
probably do that when we get done here.
What do you think happened there?
Well, obviously there's a lot of youngsters in an apartment, male and female, probably with very little supervision. And one small word leads to another word, and then the testosterone's going. So, unfortunately, one of these individuals, Marcus, has a handgun, and while the 15-year-old is sitting seated, eating a bowl of cereal, as a matter of fact, they start a little argument fight, and then shots are fired. And from that range, the 15-year-old did not survive.
There were, like you said, a lot of witnesses to this, apparently. Now, we know you took one female witness downtown, interviewed her. Anybody else talking about this crime?
Well, it's kind of unfortunate that they just don't come out and speak readily.
Right.
We talked.
You actually had to chase her, right?
Right. Once she found out she wasn't going to just get to walk free by saying, I don't know anything.
Yeah.
That wasn't going to cut it. So, fortunately, in Tulsa, we get a lot of people that eventually do talk to us, and that's what happened yesterday. Even though it was a little unfriendly, they didn't want to be there, but they had to grow up quick, and that's what happened.
Where do you think Marcus Heron is?
Well, he has Oklahoma City ties. We're not sure that he made it to Oklahoma City. While we were investigating that, we realized that we were 30 seconds away from the patrol officers finding him. As they were driving in, he was pulling out in a car. So it was real close, and it was real dangerous for a little bit for those guys, and they did a great job.
Lots of emotions at the scene last night, yesterday.
Well, I mean, it always is. When you're going to tell somebody and their loved one's dead, no matter how or why or who they are, it's never a good thing for the family to know that, and it's just something we have to endure.
Homicide Sergeant Detective Dave Walker is our guest. You can follow along. We're streaming this live on Facebook right now, and Rick Corey is with me.
Yeah, one of the things I think people would like to know is a little bit more about you. I mean, we hear about your solve rate. We know that around the country you're a rock star. You know, I mentioned that G.T. Bynum introduced you as Sherlock Holmes to his family. But and I know you were before homicide. You were on the regular department. So give us some of your background.
Are you from here?
No, I'm from St. Louis. That's where I claim to have grown up. I came here in 1982. They were the first department to hire me, and they can't get rid of me, so I've been here since. I've worked a lot of different places. Fortunately, I've been in patrol, and I got promoted, and then I went to undercover work for 10 years. Then went back out into the field in the patrol work, and then I went inside in burglary, robbery, and now homicide as a detective. So those are great places to be.
Yeah, let's put a pin in that 10 years undercover. Right. I want to come back to that. Is homicide where you always wanted to end up?
No. I never thought I would end up anywhere. You know, you just progress and you
just
move
wanted
on
to be a cop.
And that's the natural progression for me anyway. I never had this idea that I wanted to be the homicide guy. Matter of fact, I don't think I'm that good to get there, but, you know, experience means a lot.
But what is it that actually made you want to be a police officer?
No, Rick, ideally it was I wasn't smart enough to be a political scientist. So I went into law enforcement in college, and that's where I graduated. Quickly after graduation, Tulsa Police hired me. So I was tired of being broke and drunk most of the time. So I needed a job.
So that new drunk center we got downtown, that's for you, right?
Well, it would have been back in the day, but right now, no, it's not.
Welcome to True Confessions with Dave Warner. So homicide was just the natural progression, just kind of where you ended up. Are you glad you're there now?
Well, yes. I mean, I feel like I'm making a difference there. Back in the last 2 years when we had the record numbers coming in and we were working really hard, it was hard for me to break away. I couldn't just leave and retire at that point and have somebody else take it over. So we wanted to smooth it out and get things going again the way Tulsa's used to, and that's happening now.
Okay, well, let's you open the door here. Yep. Let's talk about what do you think went on the last 2 years, and we'll note first of all that this year has started out much less busy for you. In fact, aren't some of your detectives working like robbery cases right now?
Well, they are working the other assault cases, and okay, pointing and deadly weapons. We have a robbery unit that's
other
very
cases.
Good at working robbery. But we are in charge of all the other things that go on in Tulsa, the shootings that don't result in deaths, and then the barroom brawls that don't result in death. We have those. So we are working other things. We are busy.
Yeah. What do you think happened the last 2 years to cause two record homicide rates in a row?
I don't know. If we knew that, then we would bottle it and we could do that. We can't really take credit for this year because it's slow, and we can't take the blame for the last 2 years. We can just work with what we got. I think this year is a result of the last 2 years, though. I mean, eventually you're going to saturate the market, and we're going to put those people in jail that are causing this problem. And the chief has made some direction changes. Our gang unit's working real hard. The patrol officers are more aware of the violent nature that we're running through. So, but the cause of those record numbers, man, a lot of those were guns in the wrong hands of people that shouldn't have them.
Yeah, we had a text question earlier at 95920, and if you want to send one of those in via text, you're welcome to do so. Just send it to 95920. Wondering if the texter put it in quotes, the cone of silence is as unbreakable in North Tulsa as it has been in the past, and I'm assuming they're referring to what we kind of alluded to earlier, witnesses vanishing and not being willing to talk and being afraid, and in some cases you can't blame them for being afraid, but are you making inroads there?
Certainly. That's why Tulsa is solving 91%, 98% in 2016, so you don't solve it without people talking. Yeah, they may put up a good front, but we don't stop at that. I mean, you just can't let somebody say, I don't know anything, when you know they do. And you just have to keep after them. And eventually, you know, the people tell us what we need. And I say that all the time. We can't solve it without the public. And the public is doing a great job.
There's got to be something there, though. You know, we've all seen police shows where somebody gets interrogated. There's got to be something there that you're doing to push those right buttons, and your crew as well. And you're dealing with people a lot of times that may be quite a bit younger than you. What are you guys doing in those processes, you think, that's bringing that out?
Well, I think, you know, you see that on the first 48 a lot of times. We're real. I mean, it's just we're real people talking to real people and not talking like we're robots. And my group is very good at doing that. But again, it's just not allowing somebody to say, I don't know anything. You just got to keep after it, and find a different way to get after it. Sometimes you got to be mean. Sometimes you got to be nice. Sometimes you got to give them a soda. Whatever it takes.
Here's Dave Walker not being a robot on A&E's First 48.
What's our job? To put murderers in jail. You're not a murderer. Do you think Jelani's going to come down here and knock on our door? You know what we're looking for.
I do.
How do we get there?
You would have to have somebody set him up.
Would you be willing to call him and set him up?
You didn't plan on this man dying. You didn't bring a gun to the party. Who did? You didn't plan on this man dying. You didn't bring a gun to the party. Who did? Who did?
Maytag. You have to be more than an amateur psychologist, I would think, to get some of these people to talk. Yeah. Have you taken courses in psychology? Where does that come from?
That just comes from years of talking to people on the street.
Yeah.
I took psychology 101 in college, and that's it. But eventually, you learn how to speak to people at the level they're at that particular moment. And again, I think if you care about that individual and you care about the job you're doing, you're going to find a way to communicate. And that's what happens. Sometimes, like I said, you got to be angry. Sometimes you got to be soft. And eventually it comes down to we want the truth.
So you can be good cop and bad cop
in that scenario?
All in one. People have said that, yes. Most of my guys will not let me talk in the interview room. So
we have so much to explore with Dave Walker. We're going to get into the whole First 48, how he feels about doing that show on A&E, some of the cases that have stuck with him. I want to know, you're dealing with the worst of humanity so often. What do you do to buoy yourself? What do you do to lift your own spirits, Dave Walker? We'll get into all of that. And of
what you do.
You're now under arrest for first degree murder. Congratulations. That will travel with you the rest of your goddamn life.
Sir.
You had a chance. You didn't take it.
I had a chance to do it.
You had a chance to talk, to say something, to tell the truth, to man up.
I...
Something you did not do. Yeah.
Sir.
You get irritated, I'm done with you.
You
are not a man. You are a little child, a little kid, trying to tell men... And you didn't do anything when you did do something.
Okay, sir.
Yeah, okay. First degree murder, thank you very much.
8:20 on the KRMG Morning News with Dan Potter.
And that's the same guy.
That's the same guy who's been sitting here for the last half hour talking like this. Hard to believe.
Yeah.
Do you remember what case that was?
Yeah, I do. That was where that gentleman there was the adult in the group, and there was four or five juveniles that were out stealing cars, and he took a random shot at a family that was coming out and said, "Hey, quit stealing my car." And the round went through the house, and there was a guy waking up in the back bedroom, and it went through and hit him in the chest and killed him.
How long has First 48 been part of your work?
Four years now.
We had a text question. I think we actually have, let's see if I can play this via open mic as well. I think this is the right one.
I have watched four murders from my office.
No, it's not the right one. The caller wanted to know how First 48 and having the cameras around, if you think it's affected the department in any way, affected your work in homicide, pros, cons to having the cameras around?
You just got to get used to it. I don't think there was any negative aspect to it. Really, I think it's all been positive. I think the citizens get to see us. They get to see us personality-wise, and everybody thinks they know us. And once you go into a room or an apartment complex and they think they know you, it does open the door for a lot of communication.
You say that. However, we know more police that are media-averse than are media-savvy. You're always available. Your face is always on camera. You're always willing to talk to reporters. Why?
Because we need the media. And plus, you guys are a bunch of great people. For one thing, I don't have a bad experience with the media at all. And I don't know, law enforcement and media usually are like, acid and water or whatever. But we have to get our message out. And that's part of our success, is allowing other people and everybody to be responsible for solving the murder. It doesn't have to be us, but if you don't have the information, you can't solve it. So we got to get that out.
Does the proliferation of social media, because you can Facebook it on your page and you can put it on our page and it can go on other social media, it can be on Instagram, it can be on all those things, does that really help because the images and the descriptions are out so much faster?
Absolutely. These kids out there that have that information are not reading the paper. And they're not sitting, listening to the radio. They are on their phones. And so we have to adapt to that, and the media does. And so we get to use you more than you use me. So it's a good trade-off.
I wish that you could convince some other police departments of that. I mean, it's just not... That attitude is just not as prevalent as I wish that it was, because what we want to do is help. And I think you recognize that and recognize the power of radio, television, now social media, print to help you do your job and vice versa. What's the most, text at 95920, wanted to know, what's the case that has stuck with you? Do you have one that you wake up dreaming about or just still bugs you one way or another?
No, to answer that, they're all tragic, and sure, they all mean something. But the ones that absolutely, for no reason, and involves maybe teenagers that are living right. Kayla Ferrante is one of them. April Montano is another one,
right,
that comes off the top of your head. And we work real hard to solve them. But you know, every murder, there's somebody sad. And that's our mentality, is you got to work that one until we get it done. And the way to get rid of the cold case guy is to solve every one of them, and then eventually we won't have him.
When do you sleep?
Wanted to know that.
I get plenty of sleep. I think maybe the media does roll these over, and they think like I'm always there, but I go to every murder that I can, and I think that's important. You sleep when you can, and as you get older, you don't need more, as much sleep. So that's what we're finding out.
We're going to get into mass shootings, gun control, the NRA, sanctuary cities, much more to talk with Homicide Sergeant Dave Walker about. A murder happening right now. A 15-year-old teenager is dead. Another teen, the suspected killer, after a Thursday shooting.
Definitely an emotional scene at Apache Manor Thursday as loved ones of that 15-year-old victim showed up after hearing the unfortunate news. The teen did not even make it to the hospital. Police say he died inside of the apartment. Police say they still aren't certain what led up to the shooting or why someone would want this kid dead. I'm Sarah Whaley for Fox 23 and News 102.3 KRMG.
This is a special edition of the KRMG Morning News, 8 a.m. in depth hour on News 102.3 KRMG.
I've introduced my kids to him before, and so they would understand who they were meeting. I said, this is the Sherlock Holmes of Tulsa.
Yeah. I love that, the Shirley. And I'm trying to picture him in a deer stalker right now. It wouldn't look too bad.
Well, you know, he's got the other hat. Now, that hat is a hit. You hear about that all the time, don't you?
That hat was a gift from my wife. And so, yeah, it gets worn on cold and rainy days. And I like hats, actually, so it's okay. Yeah,
well, you know what? Next time you're up here, we can make that happen.
Homicide Sergeant Dave Walker is our guest for this 8 a.m. in-depth hour. But let's get into this phenomenon of mass shootings, just over 3 weeks now since the one at Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. Fortunately, we've not seen anything to that extent here in Tulsa. But as you look at these things and the prevalence of what's happening and the way that they're happening, as a homicide sergeant, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think there's got to be a component to all the killers of a mental health issue that's gone on.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that I like to say is that the person responsible for those mass killings is that person. You can't blame the law enforcement. You can't blame the teachers. You can't blame the schools or the churches or the radio personalities or, you know, the FBI.
They pulled the trigger.
That being said,
yeah,
it's our responsibility to make sure that doesn't happen. And so in the newness of predictive policing, I think it's our responsibility to go to those people and say, what do you have in your closet? And look, if your parents are unwilling to look under the bed and steal your guns, then we'll go do it. And that is the first step in preventing those with mentally challenges being armed with any type of handgun.
Do you support teachers having guns, being trained and being armed?
The knee-jerk reaction is certainly put a stop to it before it starts. The other thing is I'm not sure I want my kid or grandkids in a school where it's an armed situation. I don't know that that's the best answer. I think we got to start winning the six-year-olds and prevent this behavior. So it may take a little bit of arming a few teachers for a while, but I think the ultimate goal has to be get back to teaching, and the kids need to get back to learning.
When you say win the six-year-olds, what does that look like?
Well, that looks like we're losing generations. I've seen it in my years of policing. We've lost generations, and so the only reason to The only way to get that back is win that generation. And then 6-year-olds, I can talk to them. So it's a lot easier than a 15-year-old.
He's got 7 grandkids, so he can. What are we losing them to? Are we losing them to social media, to video games? Where are they going?
Well, I think we're losing into family structure, basically. Is that in the 80s, we had the addictiveness of crack, and those parents were addicted to crack, so the grandparents had to raise the 6-year-olds. So now those that were addicted in the 80s are the grandparents raising the kids now, and I think that's part of the issue, is they're very ill-equipped to take on what parenting is.
Let's talk a little bit about illegal immigration and how it impacts your job in sanctuary cities. Do you think that we're doing enough to eliminate the criminal element that shouldn't be here to begin with?
Gosh, the way I look at what I do is my responsibility is Tulsa, Oklahoma. If it reaches out to the different counties, that's great. But when a murder happens, no matter who committed it, my job is to find out who did it. And the big ultimate reason, if he's a Mexican national and he came here illegal, is not my professional responsibility. You know, when we start talking personally, yeah, I'd like everybody to obey the law. That doesn't happen. And I also want this country to be what it is, you know, a vision for people to go and behave and strive. And it doesn't matter what your race is or where you initially come from. Let's just get in this thing and get after it.
You know, thinking back, can you put a general statistic on how many of the murders you solved have been illegal aliens, or have they been mostly just folks from here?
Now, I would say in the last 3 or 4 years, we are seeing an increase. So I don't know what's the cause of that. It could be the heroin traffic. It could be the cartels coming in and actually making it Tulsa a place where they want to stop. But I have seen more in the last 3 or 4 years, yeah.
Taking your questions for Homicide Sergeant Dave Walker via open mic on the KRMG app.
Ask you what percentage of time or how many cases actually work out the way his gut feels the first time he interviews somebody, or, you know, as soon as he walks on a case, oh, the boyfriend did it, and it turns out the boyfriend did do it.
Love that question. How often is your gut right?
Not very.
Really? I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear that.
Well, that's why we work.
Yeah.
You go to a scene and you start making assumptions like that, and I tell people you got to start assuming something, so that's how we get to where we need to be. But if you think automatically it's the boyfriend and you start overlooking things, then we've done a disservice. Our job is to put the right person in jail. So, you know, your gut feeling at some random scene is very rarely going to be the one that ends up going to court.
See, because Rick and I solve them all the time sitting back here. Our gut's always right.
Well, my gut's so big it has to be right sometimes. It just happens. We have an interesting question by Facebook here from Jordan, who says, when you're investigating something, how do you handle very sensitive content and keep it sensitive? And especially when you're like on the first 48 and there are cameras and things are being recorded, yet you've got to do that.
I'm not sure what sensitive content we're talking about.
You know, it could be anything. It could be forms laying around. It could be things that you don't want on TV at that time. I mean, it could be...
You know, we do have intelligence files on a lot of things, and sometimes that's right and sometimes that's wrong, but the camera people are very good, even in the local media, saying what's on your desk that we can't shoot. Mm-hmm. So we keep it off that way. The first 48, we have viewings where we can say... cut that out.
Gotcha.
And they do that. So all that is handled appropriately. So none of that sensitive information gets out to the public.
Good.
Mm-hmm. We have one of the finest police departments in the country because of individuals like Dave Walker. He's honest. He has integrity. He doesn't have the myopic way of investigating a case that you...
And it ran out right there, but I get the point, and I think we just heard exactly that you don't go into this with tunnel vision. You don't go into it trusting your gut. You go by the facts.
Right. You have to. Otherwise, we are going to run the risk of putting somebody in prison that doesn't belong there.
Homicide Sergeant Dave Walker, our guest for the KRMG 8 a.m. In-Depth Hour. It's 8:41. Let's check weather and traffic. 5-day forecast brought to you by Ferguson Kia and Broken Arrow. Fox 23 and KRMG meteorologist Michael Sager.
We don't have enough to kick in the door at this time. He's going to have to come out of here sooner or later. Oh, car's leaving. The car's leaving. Definitely two heads and passengers wearing a white ball cap. As soon as we can, let's end up the vehicle at this point. Within three blocks of the murder. Unbelievable. Looks like it's not going to be usable. Hey, you guys stay there, okay? I got this.
I won't call it perfect.
That thing is boogered, man.
I'm not sure exactly what you were looking at there, Homicide Sergeant Dave Walker. Do you remember?
Yeah, sure. That was a bike that got ran over that are, like you said, my assumption was he was the suspect, but he wasn't. But he did get hit by something.
Let's see if we can get an answer to this one here.
Yeah, can you tell us about the most bone-chilling, like, murder confession that you ever had? Something that you will never forget?
I imagine that's a question you get quite a bit.
Well, really, the confessions are not the ones that you remember so much as the ones where they don't confess, and you know they did it. We had a hammer, a guy that beat an elderly man with a hammer. And he was robbing people with hammers. That in itself lets you know about the individual. But he would talk to you like we're talking here and there. But when we said talked about a hammer killing, he would just go blank. And you knew there was evil there. So very few people are evil. But you remember those. So I remember that one more than anything else.
So what do you do to unhook from this? Yeah. What I mean, you deal with the worst of humanity on a daily basis. How do you balance that out?
Well, you know, I like to say, you know, there's faith, family, and followings. There are so many more good people in this world than what we're dealing with on an 8-hour, 10-hour day. That keeps you going. I can't get through any store now without somebody stopping and talking and saying thank you and that sort of thing. So those things really do help. You know, my family is very important. My wife's very good.
How does your wife feel about your job?
She's very good at it.
She's very good at it or about it? I mean, does she help you with cases?
I was going to ask that, yeah.
Well, I think she likes to help me with cases. I'm not real sure that she's been right very often. But you know, in the room, yes, she's correct. But she does wake up with me in the phone calls.
Yeah, I can imagine. On the same topic as Dan said, you do mention you had 7 grandkids. How do you explain to them what Grandpa does?
I think the ones that are old enough are 9, just turned 9 yesterday. Joe and Claire went to...
Happy birthday, Joe.
Yeah. They watch it on the first 48. They know what's going on, and I'm Pop the Cop. So
they think it's pretty cool.
It's kind of fun.
Pretty cool.
Pop the Cop.
You did 10 years of undercover. Is that something that... I mean, how does that compare to being a homicide detective? How do you look back on those 10 years?
Well, I think that prepares you to go forward. You talk to a lot of people that way. You do a lot of investigative work. Very rarely were we in the bars, the dens, making deals hand to hand. We were more investigative, using the dopers to do the dope.
So you were working informants more than being deep undercover yourself.
Right. I think everybody thinks you're undercover and you're growing a beard and going right. And not coming home for years. But no, that wasn't it.
Okay. Instead, they had Huggy Bear. Right. You're working with him. And somebody asked, and it's a great question, is it ever like the TV shows? I mean, you see, Crime and Punishment or whatever. You see these TV shows. Are those completely just Hollywood, or is it sometimes like that?
No, I think lately the newer shows are using consultants from law enforcement because you can see, well, okay, I can see how that happens. And that's really true. But back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s even, it was like, what the heck are they? You know, that just doesn't happen. But now there are more and more realistic shows that are on prime time.
Try to get in a couple more open mic questions before we have to say goodbye.
How often do you get asked to assist other agencies in their investigations?
Oh, good question. OSBI gets called in on a lot of murders where it's a smaller town. But does TPD homicide ever get asked to help out in other cities?
No, I know those ones in the other cities are very good at what they do. They don't need our assistance. And really, it's not rocket science. And we're not curing cancer. We're just going to work. And everybody out there can work. So they don't ask us very often, but we'll ask the heck out of them if we need them.
Question for Dave Walker. How much influence did Mike Huff, the former homicide sergeant, have on his ability to work?
You were in homicide when Mike Huff was leading that division and then moved up to homicide sergeant. Talk a little bit about Mike Huff.
Well, Mike Huff, in my opinion, started this trend towards the 90% solve rate, the 100% solve rate in murders, and because of him, that happened. He's very good homicide detective, better than I will ever be. And then he put together the team that I walked into, so you just don't walk into a ground zero and expect to do the worst job or the worst. See the worst and do the best job. So Mike has a tremendous influence, and I wish he'd come and get the rest of his crap out of his office.
You know, we can put it on eBay.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, Dave, thanks for being here, man. Appreciate
I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Tulsa Homicide Detective Sergeant Dave Walker. If you missed any of this show, if you want to listen to all of it, we're going to put it up on demand at KRMG.com and on the KRMG app. And you can see the Facebook live stream as well. That will be available, Facebook.com/KRMG Tulsa.